Journal Radio, the Midwest's radio home for the outdoors. Online at sportingjournalradio.com.
Welcome to the show. I'm Brett Amundson. Thanks for tuning in across the network, online, sportingjournalradio.com, or by subscribing to the podcast. This week, we're going to talk to Joe Henry at the Sportsman Show going on in the cities this weekend. Also, Lucas Mertens from Haybale Heights on Devil's Lake. And we'll check in with Tom Gable, who's got some very interesting wolf information, some wolf research taking place up in northern Minnesota. This week's show brought to you by Lake of the Woods Tourism. Plan your trip to Lake of the Woods at lakeofthewoodsmn.com. By Haybale Heights Campground and Resort on Devil's Lake. Fish out of a snow bear, chasing perch around on Devil's Lake. Haybaleheights.com is the website. Also brought to you by Prairie Sportsman. The new season of Prairie Sportsman starts up January 27th on Pioneer Public Television. And, of course, by Fond du Lac, or the Destination Lake Winnebago region, for the Sturgeon Spectacular taking place February 5th through the 10th. Fond du Lac and the area surrounding Lake Winnebago. Go to fdl.com/ss for more information. It's been a fascinating couple of weeks here on the radio show. We've talked about so many interesting things that we don't normally always talk about here. I mean, we always kind of talk about what's going on and big game and small game and waterfowl and, of course, all the fish species and things like that and tips and hot bites and stuff. But it's been interesting the last couple of weeks to be able to talk about some of the possible reintroductions of big game, some of the dynamics they have with the predators in this state. And one study that's been going on that's been grabbing the attention of the internet everywhere is this Voyager's Wolf Project that's going on up in Voyager's National Park. Tom Gable's going to join us right now. He's a PhD student at the University of Minnesota to talk more about this project. Tom, thanks for being on the radio show.
Thanks for having me.
What is this project? First of all, how long has it been going on?
So the Voyager's Wolf Project has really been going on since 2015, which is when we really started doing intensive research into sort of the summer ecology of wolves. The park had been collaring wolves to monitor them since 2012, but in 2015 is when you really started kind of ramping up the research and looking at wolves very intensively.
Why was this project started?
The project was initially started to understand what role beavers play in the summer ecology of wolves. So in Voyager's National Park, there's a really dense beaver population, probably the densest beaver population in the lower 48 states. And as a result, wolves eat a lot of beavers during the summertime. But people know really little about wolf-beaver interactions and how beavers influence wolf-deer and wolf-moose interactions as well. And so we're trying to understand really what role beavers are playing in essentially the lives of wolves during the summertime, and then also what role wolves might be playing on beavers and how they're impacting, say, beaver populations or beaver behavior.
How did this come about? Because when you hear about wolves, particularly all of us in Minnesota, we all know the conversation about wolves and deer and wolves and moose and wolves protected and wolves not protected and this and that. But how did beavers become part of the equation?
So beavers came about. So Voyager's National Park has a long history of doing beaver research and doing really cool beaver research because of how abundant beavers have been. And so when I started as a graduate student at Northern Michigan University doing my master's there. And when I started, I was working with Dr. John Brubink at Northern Michigan and then Dr. Steve Windles, who's the wildlife biologist at Voyagers. And I was told that I had to do my master's on beavers. It could be really anything I wanted, but it had to be on beavers. And so I started thinking, okay, well, what? And I really was interested in predator-prey relationships. And I thought, what could I do? And I started reading. And I was like, wow, you know, beaver shows up in a lot of wolf diet studies throughout Minnesota and in Canada. I was like, but no one really knows a lot about it. And what I essentially found is people kind of glossed over wolf-beaver interactions because people are really interested in understanding the relationships between, say, wolves and deer and wolves and moose, because those are the important sort of social and economic big game in the areas, and beavers aren't as much in that category. So after reading some of the scientific literature and realizing some of the gaps, I got really excited about it. And I told Steve and John, and they're like, that sounds great. And so we started trying it out, and it's been very successful. One of the big problems, or at least difficulties, in studying wolf-beaver interactions is the fact that wolves are preying on beavers during the summertime. And the reason that's problematic is it's really hard to study wolves in the summer because wolves are not traveling as much as a cohesive unit during the summer. Usually they're hunting prey as individuals or in small groups within the pack. Additionally, the forest is extremely dense in Minnesota.
Leaves
and all
the
other places.
Yeah,
so you can't see them. So it's impossible to actually observe wolves and beavers interacting. So the only way you can really study it is by putting GPS collars on wolves and finding where wolves are making kills. But that's sort of where the other problem comes in. You really need GPS collars that are taking locations very frequently because wolves can kill and consume a beaver in a really short period of time and move on. And so you need to get a lot of locations so you can actually find where wolves are stopping and where they're making the kill. And then the last sort of wrinkle in all of this is the fact that even if you know where wolves have actually killed a beaver, they almost entirely consume the beaver so much that it's hard to actually find evidence of the kill when you're actually there on the ground. Because a lot of times all they'll leave of that beaver might be a few chips of bone, maybe a little bit of the beaver's stomach contents, maybe the castor glands or something from the beaver, but otherwise it's totally gone. And so it can be very difficult to find this. And that's really why wolf-beaver interactions have really remained sort of an unknown for so long.
Talking with Tom Gable here on Sporting Journal Radio. He's with the Voyagers Wolf Project taking place in the Voyagers National Park in northern Minnesota. And there's been some graphics that have been put out on Facebook. There's been a video that I want to talk about here in a little bit because the GPS collars obviously are a big part of tracking these wolves. But you also have been using some cameras, and some footage off one of these cameras recently showed a wolf feeding on suckers. Which is potentially the only video footage of something like that ever taking place, a freshwater fish. Is that right?
That's correct, yep.
So tell me about that. When did you discover that?
So we discovered this in 2017. It was the springtime, and we were starting to do our predation work in April. And by that, I mean we were starting to visit the areas where our GPS-collared wolves were spending some periods of time when we were looking for kills. And I was actually going into one of the spots where one of our wolves had spent some time. And it was along this creek bank. And as I looked up, I saw a wolf about 50 meters ahead of me. And it ran from the creek bank into the water, made a huge splash, and then it kind of stopped and kind of trotted out. And I was like, that's kind of weird, but I was really excited because I was actually observing a wolf, which never happens during our work. And so I just kind of sat there, and I hid in like the willows, and the wind direction was perfect, so the wolf didn't have any idea I was there. And I actually just watched it sort of meander along the creek bank, and every once in a while it would stop and chew on something. And I was like, huh, that's weird, but I didn't put it all together. And actually, that wolf ended up walking within about 8 meters of me, unaware that I was there. It was crazy.
Cool.
I just sat there perfectly still. And then eventually it walked and it got my scent and ran into the woods. And after it left, I went and I searched the area it was spending time in. And what I found were just fish scales and fish guts and all sorts of stuff just scattered along the creek bank. And I saw wolf tracks throughout the creek. And I was like, oh my goodness, they're killing fish. Like, that's crazy.
So you actually saw this with your own eyes before you saw it on camera. So you put the camera up because you'd seen this.
Right. And because, so yeah, that was the first clue. And then what we saw from the GPS collars we had is that the wolf was spending a ton of time around this creek. Like, all the locations were, or at least about 50% of them, were all around this one creek. And so we're like, oh, it keeps going back there to get fish. So then we knew this behavior had happened in 2017, but it was rare. I mean, people hadn't really documented this before in a freshwater system. And so we're or if this was going to be a recurring thing. So in 2017, got a GPS collar on another wolf in that same pack, and sure enough, come mid-April, it started going to the creek. And so we quickly went out there and like, we got to get this on camera. And so we put up a couple video cameras in some spots that it looked like the wolves had been spending a lot of time, and that's how we ended up getting the footage that's on our Facebook page. Is just a remote camera that we put in sort of this little bend in the creek where the suckers were obviously kind of coming around and the wolf was able to catch him.
And that was, okay, so you cut out just a little bit there. So that video was taken this year, this spring?
Yep, in spring of 2018.
Okay, and is this the first time that footage has been released then?
Yep, that's the first time.
Why were you holding on to it?
We wanted to try to maximize the viewership of it and share it with as many people as possible.
Okay.
And after our Facebook page kind of exploded after we put this one map up showing the different wolf packs.
Yeah.
We got a lot of people and a lot of activity and excitement. We thought, well, this is a great time to follow that up with this video because people will see it. And that's really what we wanted to do is show people what we had found. And that worked out really nicely. I think 350,000 people have viewed that video so far. And so that's great.
Well, I want to talk about, because the graphic that you just mentioned is what got my attention. And I want to explain to people, or have you explain to people, what that graphic shows. When we come back, we got to take a quick break. Tom Gable is our guest, Voyager's Wolf Project. He's a PhD student at the University of Minnesota. There's this wolf study going on with their interactions with beaver in the Voyager's National Park. So more with Tom coming up. Plus, we'll get some fishing reports, Lake of the Woods, and Devil's Lake as well here on Sporting Journal Radio.
Welcome to the walleye capital of the world. Welcome to Lake of the Woods. With over 50 resorts and motels to stay at, Lake of the Woods is a winter destination trip that deserves to be on every angler's list. Bring the family too. Book a fully guided trip in a heated fish house or do it yourself. Don't leave the snowmobiles at home either. The Lake of the Woods area offers hundreds of miles of groomed trails to spend the day on. Come visit the walleye capital of the world. Come visit Lake of the Woods. Plan your trip at lakeofthewoodsmn.com. That's lakeofthewoodsmn.com.
The Sturgeon Spectacular is coming to Lake Winnebago as Fond du Lac celebrates this prehistoric fish with events for the whole family on and off the ice February 5th through the 10th. This unique opportunity to spear a sturgeon is unlike anything else in the world. But it's not just about that. Come for the fish, stay for the fun. Live music, the World Ice and Snow Sailing Championship, the Wisconsin Snow Sculpting Competition, and more. Visit FDL.com/SS for more information. That's FDL.com/SS.
No matter how cold, no matter how much snow there is, the perch don't stand a chance.
Fish legendary Devil's Lake for their famous jumbo perch and walleye in the warm comfort of a snow bear at Haybale Heights Campground and Resort. Fishing for perch requires mobility, and you can't get more mobile than a fish house with tracks. The snow bear fleet is on the ice every day at Haybale Heights, and you could be too. Every winter requires a trip to Devil's Lake, and there's no better way to do it than in a snow bear at Haybale Heights. Visit haybaleheights.com to book your trip today. Sporting Journal Radio is brought to you in part by Pioneer Public Television, producer of Prairie Sportsman with myself, Brett Amundson. Prairie Sportsman celebrates our love of the outdoors as we hunt, fish, and recreate while working to protect our valuable natural resources. Tune in to watch Prairie Sportsman on PBS stations throughout Minnesota and North Dakota, or watch the show online at prairiesportsman.com. And you can find us on Facebook, Instagram, and Snapchat. Search for Prairie Sportsman. This is Sporting Journal Radio. Thanks for tuning in across the Sporting Journal Radio Network online, sportingjournalradio.com. Find us on Facebook as well and listen to us in your favorite podcast app. Now, if you find us on Facebook, it was either, I think it's a Sporting Journal Radio Facebook or the Prairie Sportsman Facebook page. I know I've shared a couple of posts from this Voyager's Wolf Project. You can find them on Facebook as well, Voyager's Wolf Project, because what caught my attention a few weeks back was a graphic, and it was basically a map with all these colors on it. And if you know anything about wolves, you know they get territorial, they form a pack. A lot of times the packs don't interact necessarily, but to see it drawn out in a color-coded map, just how well-defined these pack boundaries are, it's absolutely amazing to me, and it's fascinating to look at. And Tom Gable is our guest right now. He's a PhD student at the University of Minnesota. He's with the Voyager's Wolf Project. And explain to our listeners that map graphic that we're talking about.
So that map graphic really sort of came about almost incidentally. We had been collaring wolves for our predation research, which is largely funded by the Minnesota Environment and Natural Resources Trust Fund, and we're trying to understand wolf predation on beavers. And so we were just collaring wolves, putting these collars that take locations every 20 minutes, and then the wolves basically run around all summer and they give us their territories. Well, we happened to just get collars in six adjacent wolf packs to one another. And so we are able to track the movements of one wolf in each of these packs over the course of the summer. And by doing that, and because our collars take locations every 20 minutes, we were able to get about 12 to 13,000 locations from each individual wolf in those packs. And it provided this amazing sort of map where you can actually see where each wolf was traveling throughout the summer, and you can see how well they know each other's pack boundaries, which is just really incredible, I think.
Yeah, I mean, you rarely had anyone from one pack venturing into the other territory. It seemed like, I'm guessing it's scent, or how? I mean, how do they know just how well defined that boundary is?
I think most of the time, I think it's scent. There are a few instances where there's some clear sort of geographical boundaries, say a long bay or a river or something like that. But a lot of times, it's just scent. And I think that's probably the most fascinating part of it is, as people, you know, we usually see boundaries visually. We can see that there's something that's impeding our way. But the idea that you could like experience the world so strongly just through scent is kind of incredible to really think about and to know exactly where you are just based on scent alone. And that's really what I think wolves are doing. They probably monitor those boundaries and they mark them with scent, are with urine and feces and things like that. And then other wolves that come through know that, like, that's the edge. And this is the area that I'm not supposed to go in.
Well, I've heard that wolves can smell. It's amazing that you were that close to a wolf, and it just goes to show what having the wind in your favor can do, because I've heard if the wind is right and the conditions are right, that they can smell you like 5 miles away or something like that.
That I'm not entirely sure. 5 miles would be a,
that's a lot.
Ways.
Yeah.
But I've heard some people use the analogy that it's like our ability to smell wildfires when, like, there's a big fire and you're miles downwind. Sometimes you can still smell it and get whiffs. And I know up in the park this year, we got some of that. And so people or scientists have said it, you know, it's probably similar to that. Now, whether or not it's 5 miles or a mile, I don't know. But certainly they have incredible abilities to smell things, and they can definitely detect. I mean, they can be downwind a ways, and if they get your scent, especially if they smell you as a person, they're gone.
Yeah.
So they definitely have an incredible ability to smell things.
Tom Gable, our guest, Sporting Journal Radio, talking about the Voyager's Wolf Project in Voyager's National Park. And this is you're funded by the ENTRF, which is just a great fund. We work with those guys as well, with Prairie Sportsman. And then is this in collaboration with National Park Service, or who all are you working with on this?
Sure. So yeah, the Voyager's Wolf Project is mainly a collaboration between Voyager's National Park, who provides a lot of the financial and logistical support for the project, as well as the University of Minnesota, which also provides financial and logistical support for the project. And then obviously we're funded through the ENTRF for our work. So, but we have a lot of other donors and funding sources that also help us with purchasing things like collars and things like that. So the Van Sloan Foundation out of the Twin Cities has provided support for our work. And so we try to get funds from a variety of different sources to make the project a reality.
There's a couple of other things. I mean, there's so many aspects to this that we could probably talk about, but I want to ask, you're obviously beavers and wolves are the main part of this, but what are you seeing about wolf and deer interactions? Because obviously you've got to come across some deer wolf interactions in your studies up there. What are you seeing when it comes to that, or even moose up there, I guess?
Sure. No, that's a great question. So, and I should back up a little bit. So while our focus is largely on wolves and beavers, we really are trying to get sort of the whole picture of wolves during the summer in Minnesota. So we're really looking at wolves during the ice-free period, which is basically April till the end of October. And we study whatever they're eating during that time is what we're looking at. And we're also trying to understand their denning behavior as well. So we find adult deer that are killed by wolves, and generally adult deer are being killed in, say, April, which is, you know, after the snow's melted and deer are still in poor condition, or at least there's some deer that are. And then in the fall is when wolves start going after adult deer again more often. We rarely, I mean, very, very rarely actually find wolves killing adult deer during the summertime, usually just because adult deer are in peak physical condition during that time, and wolves are instead hunting and killing things like beavers and deer fawns. So we certainly are also studying wolf predation on deer fawns, because once the fawns are born in late May, wolves quickly switch their predation behaviors, and they focus on fawns pretty intensively for about a 4 to 5 week period when the fawns are most vulnerable. And so we see wolves killing fawns during that June period. And then once the end of June comes around, we see a very dramatic decrease in wolf predation on deer fawns. And that roughly coincides with when fawns are mature enough to actually escape wolves. And so we're trying to kind of put all of this together. And one thing that I should note that I think is important is why this is unique. So I had someone one time ask me, they said, you know, what is there about wolves that we don't already know? And it's a very valid question. And what I simply responded with is, we don't have any estimates of how many deer, fawns, or beavers a typical wolf actually kills in northern Minnesota. And so you think about it, that's pretty staggering. You know, for 7 months of the year, we don't have any idea what wolves are actually doing, because most of our predation work in the state has occurred during the wintertime. And I should say, it's not only in Minnesota. No one in North America has an estimate right now of how many fawns and beavers wolves are killing in a given year. So those are the questions that we're trying to answer, because those can be very helpful in understanding a lot of these ecological relationships.
Talking with Tom Gable here about wolves on Sporting Journal Radio. More with Tom coming up. Plus, Lucas Mertens from Haybale Heights will get a Devil's Lake report, and also check in with Joe Henry and talk about a huge eel pout that got caught recently up on Lake of the Woods.
The Sturgeon Spectacular is coming to Lake Winnebago as Fond du Lac celebrates this prehistoric fish with events for the whole family on and off the ice February 5th through the 10th. This unique opportunity to spear sturgeon is unlike anything else in the world. But it's not just about that. Come for the fish, stay for the fun. Live music, the World Ice and Snow Sailing Championship, the Wisconsin Snow Sculpting Competition, and more. Visit FDL.com/SS for more information. That's FDL.com/SS.
No matter how cold, no matter how much snow there is, the perch don't stand a chance.
Fish legendary Devil's Lake for their famous jumbo perch and walleye in the warm comfort of a snow bear at Haybale Heights Campground and Resort. Fishing for perch requires mobility, and you can't get more mobile than a fish house with tracks. The snow bear fleet is on the ice every day at Haybale Heights, and you could be too. Every winter requires a trip to Devil's Lake, and there's no better way to do it than in a snow bear at Haybale Heights. Visit haybaleheights.com to book your trip today. Sporting Journal Radio is brought to you in part by Pioneer Public Television, producer of Prairie Sportsman with myself, Brett Amundson. Prairie Sportsman celebrates our love of the outdoors as we hunt, fish, and recreate while working to protect our valuable natural resources. Tune in to watch Prairie Sportsman on PBS stations throughout Minnesota and North Dakota, or watch the show online at prairiesportsman.com. And you can find us on Facebook, Instagram, and Snapchat. Search for Prairie Sportsman.
Welcome to the walleye capital of the world. Welcome to Lake of the Woods. With over 50 resorts and motels to stay at, Lake of the Woods is a winter destination trip that deserves to be on every angler's list. Bring the family too. Book a fully guided trip in a heated fish house, or do it yourself. Don't leave the snowmobiles at home either. The Lake of the Woods area offers hundreds of miles of groomed trails to spend the day on. Come visit the walleye capital of the world. Come visit Lake of the Woods. Plan your trip at lakeofthewoodsmn.com. That's lakeofthewoodsmn.com.
You're listening to Sporting Journal Radio.
We're back, Sporting Journal Radio. Just a couple of minutes left with Tom Gable here talking about wolves on Sporting Journal Radio.
What have you found out so far, and when is this project, or how long is this project going to go, I guess?
So the project has funding for the next 2 years, and we're going to hope to get more funding to keep the project going. One of the things we've run into, or one of the difficulties, is it's extremely time intensive to actually study wolves during the summertime. I mean, we're trying to cover an area that's about 500 to 600 square kilometers almost every day. And so we've got a crew of 8 people, and we're just constantly trying to follow these wolves around. So we can't study that many of them in a given year, because to get our good estimates, we need to get to every single spot that these wolves have remained stationary for 20 minutes to find kills. So right now we have some really, like, really early preliminary data. I don't have the numbers for wolf predation on fawns. For beavers, we're seeing that on average, a typical wolf is killing somewhere between 6 to 10 beavers, but it's highly variable. We have some wolves that haven't killed a single beaver all year, and then we've had other wolves that have killed up to 28 beavers in a summer. So that's a lot of beavers. And so we're trying to understand what's really causing this. And then we're also trying to sort of link wolf predation on beavers to wolf predation on fawns and moose calves, for example. And so we're trying to basically say, okay, do wolves that eat more beavers, are they less likely to kill deer fawns, or do they kill fewer deer fawns and moose calves because they're killing on beavers? Or is it just the opposite, that maybe a wolf that's really good at killing beavers is also really good at killing other things as well? And so we're trying to put that all together, but it takes a lot of time, which is also another reason why that data doesn't exist right now.
This project has been going on since 2015. Have you noticed, and that's coincidentally right around the time that wolves were back on the protected list, the endangered species list. Have you noticed an increase in the wolf population at all?
The wolf population in the Voyageurs National Park area has remained relatively stable through time. Our densities of wolves, they fluctuate year to year, but there haven't been huge dramatic swings. And most of that, or at least most wolf research suggests that wolf densities are simply a result of prey densities. And so as long as our prey densities remain relatively similar, we're going to see relatively similar wolf densities with expected annual variation in there, but nothing, no huge dramatic trends, I would say.
And you probably don't have room. I mean, pack sizes probably don't fluctuate too much, and you probably only have room for so many packs. So you're probably not going to see a whole lot of change in population.
Right. Yep. I mean, the wolf packs are certainly packed and they're tight. And on average, we have about 5 wolves per pack, and that fluctuates anywhere between like 4.8 wolves on average to 5.3 wolves per pack. Sure. But there's not huge changes there.
One last graphic that I want to talk about that came out on Facebook was showing a wolf crossing a river or a body of water. I can't remember what it was exactly, but it was a fairly sizable swim, wasn't it?
Yep. So it was a dispersing wolf that we caught. We caught the wolf south of the park where we collared it, and then that wolf actually ended up near Red Lake, Ontario, about 240 miles north of where it was caught.
Wow.
And collared. So it went through the middle of the park, through the Cabotogama Peninsula, and then actually swam across Rainy Lake, and it swam out to Dryweed Island, which is a big island in Rainy Lake, and then swam north into Canada, and then just ran straight north once it got into Canada. And so we estimate it must have swam about 2.6 miles or somewhere around there in a couple days. So, which really isn't that surprising. We've seen wolves swim distances like this before. But I think what was interesting is that that's something that most people rarely get to see, probably because a lot of that behavior is happening when people aren't around or it's happening at night.
Voyageurs Wolf Project, Tom Gable, PhD student, University of Minnesota. Thanks for all the info. And thanks for being on Sporting Journal Radio.
Sure. Thanks for having me.
Now we're going to head up to Haybale Heights Campground and Resort on Devil's Lake to check in with owner Lucas Mertens. Lucas, how are things?
Hey, things are good. We are in just settling in to some nice, consistent weather finally. The bite on Devil's Lake has definitely picked up here the last week, and we're just kind of settling in right now.
Yeah, I'll tell you what. I know I shared a couple of pictures on the Sporting Journal Radio Facebook page from some table shots that you've had up there, and it looks like the fishing has picked up.
Yeah. The perch bite in particular has turned on here, which is good. We went through a little lull there, but things are going real good. Got lots of ice. We have a fair amount of snow out on the lake. There's some fairly big drifts, and you got to kind of navigate around some of that. But, for us and the snow bear, that's no big deal at all. We can kind of do whatever we need to do.
Yeah, those snow bears are nice. People that don't know, like a portable fish house on tracks. You can navigate through the snow. You can stay portable. If you're in there fishing, you don't even have to get out of the house, really. You can stay in nice and warm as you move around the lake. And I know, Lucas, I think last time we talked, you had some guys that were traveling 14 hours or something like that. And I'm assuming they were coming from warmer climates. What do those guys, what do they say when they climb into one of those snow bears?
Well, a lot of guys, they'll come in and they get in about the time that all the guys are coming off the lake, and they get to look at the snow bear, and then they kind of get to dream about it for the night. And then they then in the morning, you know, there's always all that anticipation of getting out there and getting after these fish. And they come back and they just say, wow, that was amazing. How many times we moved and, you know, what we did and how warm we stayed. Now, I did just post a picture of us out the other day, and we had sustained winds of 45 miles an hour for the whole day. Oof. I mean, it was downright just nasty out. And, I mean, we were fishing in t-shirts, and it let us go out and fish and also be safe too. I mean, there was really no threat of anything happening to us. So, and we caught a lot of fish that day, and I don't know how many other people were out on the lake. We couldn't see very far. We didn't see very many people, but that is just one of the advantages of coming and fishing with us.
Lucas Mertens, our guest, Sporting Journal Radio, Hay Bale Heights Campground and Resort, Devil's Lake, North Dakota. Being out in those snow bears, I know you mentioned perch fishing has picked up because walleye fishing has been good all winter, right?
Yeah, the walleye bite has been good ever since early ice. So that's been staying real steady. It's been a real good bite on the walleye.
The perch, I know you were marking them for a while. They were a little tight-lipped. You have to be fairly mobile with them. As this bite has picked up, have you been able to get on a school and kind of stay on them, or do you got to chase them around a little bit?
No, what we're seeing this year is the fish don't seem to be in the great big schools that they were in last year. Last year, if you found a school, it was usually a really big. What we're seeing this year is pods of fish. Seems like they're just, you know, there might be a little pod over here and a little pod over there. And we can see that when we're working an area with multiple snow bears. You know, one guy might not have anything, and then the guys are talking amongst each other, and maybe one guy down the shoreline a little farther, he's getting them, and a guy in the opposite direction is getting them. So they just seem like they're in little pods just roaming around, and I'm not an expert. I wish I knew what was going on down there all the time, but they just don't seem to be in those big schools yet.
And as far as what you're using, I've always liked to use something that kind of rattles a little bit. Has it been an aggressive bite, or have you had to go real small with lures?
No, when they bite really well. You know, sometimes, you know, it might take, you know, until 2 o'clock in the afternoon before we have maybe a flurry that takes off, and because they don't bite all day, that's for sure. They've been just biting, you know, little periods of time, and you just pick away at them and move and try to find some that are biting. You know, you can sit there on the same fish for an hour, multiple fish, and sometimes they just won't bite, but maybe you can move just a little bit and get on a little bit more aggressive pod, and that seems to be the trick.
Well, I'm excited. I want to try to get up there before winter's over. I know you run those snow bears till about mid-March, so we'll have to try to get a date figured out to get some people, because I really want, my dad's never fished Devil's Lake, and I really want to get him up there, and he'd be perfect in one of those snow bears. So we'll have to figure that out, Lucas. And if anybody else listening wants to get in and fish up there through Hay Bale Heights, what can they do for more information?
They can call me direct, 701-351-3130. They can look at our Facebook page, or they can go to our website, haybaleheights.com.
No matter how cold, no matter how much snow there is, the perch don't stand a chance.
Fish legendary Devil's Lake for their famous jumbo perch and walleye in the warm comfort of a snow bear at Hay Bale Heights Campground and Resort. Fishing for perch requires mobility, and you can't get more mobile than a fish house with tracks. The snow bear fleet is on the ice every day at Hay Bale Heights, and you could be too. Every winter requires a trip to Devil's Lake, and there's no better way to do it than in a snow bear at Hay Bale Heights. Visit haybaleheights.com
lakewinnebago.com to book your trip today.
The Sturgeon Spectacular is coming to Lake Winnebago as Fond du Lac celebrates this prehistoric fish with events for the whole family on and off the ice February 5th through the 10th. This unique opportunity to spear sturgeon is unlike anything else in the world. But it's not just about that. Come for the fish, stay for the fun. Live music, the World Ice and Snow Sailing Championship, the Wisconsin Snow Sculpting Competition, and more. Visit FDL.com/SS for more information. That's FDL.com/SS.
Welcome to the walleye capital of the world. Welcome to Lake of the Woods. With over 50 resorts and motels to stay at, Lake of the Woods is a winter destination trip that deserves to be on every angler's list. Bring the family too. Book a fully guided trip in a heated fish house or do it yourself. Don't leave the snowmobiles at home either. The Lake of the Woods area offers hundreds of miles of groomed trails to spend the day on. Come visit the walleye capital of the world. Come visit Lake of the Woods. Plan your trip at lakeofthewoodsmn.com. That's lakeofthewoodsmn.com.
Sporting Journal Radio is brought to you in part by Pioneer Public Television, producer of Prairie Sportsman with myself, Brett Amundson. Prairie Sportsman celebrates our love of the outdoors as we hunt, fish, and recreate while working to protect our valuable natural resources. Tune in to watch Prairie Sportsman on PBS stations throughout Minnesota and North Dakota, or watch the show online at prairiesportsman.com. And you can find us on Facebook, Instagram, and Snapchat. Search for Prairie Sportsman.
You're listening to Sporting Journal Radio.
All right, we're back. Sporting Journal Radio. There is a lot going on again this weekend. It's another busy weekend. The show season is here, and Joe Henry from Lake of the Woods Tourism is back in the Twin Cities again this weekend. What is it this weekend? The Sportsman Show, Joe?
Yeah, the Minnesota Sportsman Show down at the St. Paul River Center. Yep.
You're doing a couple of seminars there?
Yeah, so, you know, Lake of the Woods Tourism has a booth where, you know, it's always great to interact with customers, you know, and you know, the reason I say interact with customers, you know, so many times, Brett, people come up to me and ask me that famous loaded question, where's my best place to stay?
Yeah, right.
And that's, you know, so really my question back is, well, you know, let me ask you a few questions. You know, what kind of group do you have? Is it a family? Is it a group of guys? A group of gals? You know, what is it? When do you want to go? What kind of fishing do you want to do? Do you have your own equipment, or, you know, own boats or own fish houses? Or is the Northwest angle possibility? Does everybody have, you know, the proper credentials to get into Canada and through Canada? And, you know, I ask a lot of questions, and usually from that, I can really help give them a few choices that would be really good fits for them. And that's what I found to be the best thing, you know, about talking with people that way. Oftentimes we're talking about, you know, fishing spots, fishing techniques. Somebody might say, hey, listen, you know what, I go up in March. I know you guys have ice fishing all through March. And what do you recommend? You know, like going out of the South Shore, or like going out of the angle. And, you know, we can talk about spots or techniques, or the morning evening bite along Pine Island or at Zippel. Or, I mean, there's so many things that, you know, we talk about. But that's the nice opportunity at a sports show, is to go eyeball to eyeball, belly to belly with people.
Sure. And Joe, you probably won't have to talk about the Northwest angle much anymore, because we're giving that back to Canada, right?
Yeah. You saw that, huh?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. No, you know, for listeners who didn't see that, there was a, you know, I think if you can go on the government's website, perhaps it's the White House or the U.S. government, and anybody can put a petition in. And if the petition gets like 100,000 signatures within like a month, then the government will at least, or the White House will at least address and make a comment on it. Doesn't mean they'll do anything on it. Well, somebody had put a comment in there that we should let the Northwest angle go to Canada, because after all, it was a mapping area to begin with anyway, right?
Right.
Who knows who did it? You don't have to put your name down, and they got a, you know, I don't know if they got 1,000 signatures or something. It's not going to happen. But
no.
I tell you, it sure raised a bunch of eyebrows, and the media sure jumped on it. I mean, I got phone calls. I did a radio interview with a Canadian Broadcasting Corporation, and you know, reporters were calling, and oh my goodness, there is a lot of ire.
Well, brought a lot of attention to the angle, at least, and as a tourism director, that's not always a bad thing, is it?
No, you know, really, it's really kind of funny about that. We talked about that one in the interviews I did, and, you know, yeah, no, it's awareness, and it's also awareness of the unique part of the angle, just that it's that little piece that sticks up into Canada. It's the northernmost point of the contiguous U.S. It's where the 14,552 islands begin. I mean, those are fun messages, and those are why, all those things are why people go to the Northwest angle. It's the feel, it's the culture, it's the 110 permanent residents that live up there. It's the only active one-room school in Minnesota. I mean, all these nuances that make that area so special, let alone the fishing, you know, and Right, you've been up there. You know what it's like.
It's a very interesting place, and it takes a certain kind of someone to live in an area like that, doesn't it, Joe?
Oh, you know, it really does. And, you know, everything is more difficult up there because it's colder, and you don't have the resources, and you really, you know, and I don't live up there. You know, the people that live up there, I have a chance to know quite a few of them, and, you know, they tell me you really have to lean on your neighbor, even if you don't like them that much. You help each other out just because, you know, you don't have that many people to assist. So people are constantly helping each other out. It's a very unique place to live. You know, you got half the people that live on islands and half the people that live on the mainland up there. And,
yeah.
Of course, that, you know, anything you do, if you go grocery shopping, you know what? It's almost like a half day deal because you have to travel across two borders, and you know, it's an hour trek, and I mean, just everything takes more time. Now, here's the unique thing, I think, is that, you know, the U.S. mail is delivered up to Angle Inlet, which is the little community in the mainland there, and it's also delivered to Oak Island, to the Oak Island Post Office, at Sportsman's Oak Island there. Same thing with, you know, ordering on, like, Amazon and stuff now. You know, you can order a package on Amazon, and it'll get shipped to you in the Northwest Angle just like it would if you're in a metro area.
By boat.
By boat, by snow machine with a trailer. Yeah, that's just kind of a part of life up there. I mean, the UPS guy, you know, we all know him, and, you know, that's his thing. He runs, makes a run every single day, and it's just a very unique area.
Yeah, and when we were up there last year, Joe, we went up there and snowmobiled all the way from the south end of Lake of the Woods up to the Northwest Angle with a 42-mile trek, whatever it is. And then we went on some of the trails around the angle, and I remember seeing the school bus. You talked about a one-room schoolhouse at the Northwest Angle, but those kids, some of those high school kids, though, they got a pretty long bus trip, don't they?
Every day they do, yeah. Yep, and, you know, it's funny because some of them you know, the parents tell me a lot of them will get on that bus really early. And, you know, a lot of them will sleep on the way to school and you know, either do homework or sleep on the way back. And some of them, if they have cousins or good friends, and they go to War Road in that case. That's where the school district is for the Northwest Angle. But when they go into War Road, you know, some of them will stay overnight a couple nights a week, especially if they're doing sports and stuff. So they work it out. But, you know, the whole thing is just so unique. And, but, you know, like one parent told me, you know, there's a lot of hardships up here, you know, we have to go through and stuff. But at the same time, the reason we live here is we feel that all the good things about it, the tight-knit community, the good school system, the way the kids are raised, the responsibility kids take up there, not having some of the distractions that maybe aren't so favorable in the larger communities, you know, all those things make up for some of the challenges.
Joe Henry, our guest, Sporting Journal Radio, talking about Lake of the Woods and the Northwest Angle specifically. If you have more questions about the Northwest Angle this weekend and you're in St. Paul, you can stop by the Sportsman's Show, see the Lake of the Woods tourism booth there, and ask Joe in person. Maybe while you're there, you can ask him how to catch a 43-inch eel pout as well.
Yeah. Well, there's some big pout up on Lake of the Woods. And, you know, I think a few state records have come from Lake of the Woods. The current state record for Minnesota is from Lake of the Woods, Brett. And, you know, those pout, I mean, I'll tell you, you set the hook on a big fish, and I think most people are hoping it's a walleye. But nowadays, you know, a lot of people, because they like the taste of those pout, those the poor man's lobster, as they call it, they're not so bummed out when they see it's a big pout below the ice.
Well, they're fun to catch. They put up a good fight, and we shared
they
that.
Fight. Yeah, they fight hard, don't they?
They do, and we shared a picture. I think it was from Arneson's, I think, had a picture on Facebook. We shared it on the Sporting Journal Radio Facebook page. That was a huge fish.
Oh, yeah, they get to be big. You know, it's funny, because when you're pulling in a pout, one of the ways you can tell it's a pout compared to a walleye is, you know, the walleye is more of a consistent hard fight, and it'll run once in a while, whereas a pout, they'll shake their heads constantly in the way they twist and turn, so it bounces your rod. When your rod gets real bouncy, that's a good sign it's an eel pout. Yeah. However, I wouldn't take any chances. I'd keep that line tight, keep that rod taut, yeah. And you just never know when it's a great big eye that's fooling you.
I saw a bunch of pictures, Joe, of big eel pout coming lately. It looked like, a couple of them looked like they were during the day, and it seems like, I guess Lake of the Woods, all bets are off, but it seems like a fish that you catch more at night.
Yeah, you know, I think in a lot of bodies of water you do, I think they're, you know, they feed by... They don't have real good eyesight, so they feed by scent and by movement and their lateral line and such. And, you know, I think that's true, but, you know, because of the stained water of Lake of the Woods, we get a ton of them during the day. That's, you know, we do get some at night, but, you know, most, just because anglers are fishing, probably most are caught during the day. you know, I can promise you this, when I'm doing seminars at the Sportsman Show this week, and I probably won't be talking about eel pouts.
Probably not, but...
I mean, you never know. Somebody asks once in a while, but you mentioned seminars earlier in our chat here, and we're doing two seminars. I'm doing two seminars each day at the Sportsman Show. One of them is, you know, crawler harnesses A to Z, and crawler harnesses are such an effective technique to catch walleyes. So we're going to focus on the nuances of catching walleyes wherever you fish on crawler harnesses. So the second one is top techniques for walleye success. And, you know, we're going to be talking about a lot of the nuances to some of the different ways of fishing walleyes. So we'll talk about harnesses and crankbaits and jigging, but we're going to talk about the little things that make the big difference when you're using those techniques for walleyes. And, you know, it ends up being a fun seminar, just a lot of things. What it is, a bunch of anglers of all ability levels, and we're chit-chatting about how to catch more walleyes, and it's usually a pretty good deal.
Well, those are a little bit tougher to use through the ice, obviously. Right now, what are people doing up there? They're catching fish up there. I've been seeing some nice walleye pictures out of Lake of the Woods too lately, Joe.
Yep, yeah, fish are coming pretty nice. You know, my understanding is on the big basin, the resort's fishing out of the south end there. You know, they're out in no man's land. They're out in some structure. Depends on what part of the lake you're on. And, you know, they're catching a lot of fish. So you're going to have to sort through a lot of small ones, which is so good for our future. But, yep, they're sorting through some fish. They're getting their keeper, their eaters. They're getting their occasional monster. They're getting some slot fish that you have to take a picture of and put them back. That would be the 19.5 to 28-inch variety. And then, of course, you know, we talked about the angle. Up at the angle right now, fishing's tremendous. They have a stronger mix of walleyes up there than they do saugers. You get a lot of saugers on the south end because of that basin. Up at the angle, you're going to get a higher percentage of walleyes. And they're still fishing structure. They're still fishing underwater reefs, underwater points, things like that. Eventually, as the winter goes on, they'll start sliding into the mud where those fish will start relating to more old bloodworms coming out of the mud and different kind of nymphs that are almost like little worms before they turn into bugs in the summertime and shed their skin. And just there's a lot of living stuff in that mud as well as minnows that are roaming out there and a lot of food for them to eat.
Well, if people stop by the Sportsman Show this weekend, Saturday or Sunday, depending on what time they're listening to this show right now. When are you going to be out there, and where can they find you?
Yeah, you know what? The best thing I say, just grab a program you get when you check in, and you'll see the Lake of the Woods Tourism's booth. Where there's one section that's upstairs. It has all the different destinations. They got you know, the boats, and the RVs, and the fish and tackle, and all that stuff on the main floor. And then upstairs are all the destinations, as well as a seminar room. You know, we're real happy to help with any questions, whether you do it on your own, whether you use our resorts.
And they can also go to your website to get a lot of that info, too.
Sure can. And that, if you want to check out our website, we had everything there. And that's, of course, lakeofthewoodsmn.com.
All right, my thanks to Hay Bale Heights Campground and Resort on Devil's Lake, haybaleheights.com, for being a sponsor of the show. Also, Lake of the Woods Tourism, lakeofthewoodsmn.com, to plan your trip to Lake of the Woods for this winter. Fond du Lac Convention and Visitors Bureau, the Sturgeon Spectacular, February 5th through the 10th in Fond du Lac on Lake Winnebago. And, of course, Prairie Sportsman, the new season starting January 27 on Pioneer Public. And thank you for listening. You've been listening to Sporting Journal Radio, the Midwest's radio home for the outdoors. To listen to the show again, go to sportingjournalradio.com or download the podcast in your podcast app or iTunes. Find us on Facebook. Search for Sporting Journal Radio.